Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a glass of refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this hour, Canada Dry presents Information, Please. 30 minutes of questions, plus answers, plus fun. Send us stickers. We set up a four-man board of able and willing experts to answer them. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't get head up over it. Wherever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please, as you know, is an ad-lib, unrestrained and unrehearsed program. The rules are very simple. The experts raise their hands if they think they know the answer, and if they miss, Canada Dry cheerfully pays out $10 to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question itself. Tonight our board consists of our tried and true trio, Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the famous humorous column, The Conning Tower, which appears regularly in the New York Post, the big swan and woodpecker man, Mr. John Kieran, Oscar Levant, composer and pianist. As our guest of honor, we present Stanley Walker, editor of the Philadelphia Public Ledger and the author of The Nightclub Era, Mrs. Astor's Horse, and other shrewd and lively books. Now, gentlemen, we'll get down to business. Cash register all ready? Let's go. Any of you gentlemen fishermen, or are you all fishermen? I know Mr. Kieran fishes. Do you fish, Mr. Walker?
No. Sorry.
Don't fish for answers this evening. Well, Mrs. H.J. Burns of Columbia, Missouri, asks the following questions about fishing. First, where did Simple Simon fish? Where did Simple Simon fish? Mr. Adams.
For to catch a whale.
Where did he fish? Not the purpose. Not the purpose. Give me another chance on that, Mr. Adams.
I don't know.
Mr. Kieran.
All the water that he had was in his mother's pail.
Yes. In his mother's pail, Mr. Adams. Well, it's the first answer that we mark correct or incorrect, so we're out on that one. Where did little Tommy Tittlemouse fish? You can come in on this, Mr. Adams, and retrieve yourself. Mr. Walker, do you know anything about Tommy Tittlemouse? Haven't heard about him down in Philadelphia. Mr. Kieran. Mr. Adams.
Did he fish?
He fished, yes.
In a little house.
Oh, no. He lived in a little house. Little Tommy Tittlemouse...
In other men's ditches.
Ah, that's right, Mr. Adams. Little Tommy Tittlemouse lived in a little house. He caught fishes in other men's ditches. We'll mark that correct for Mr. Adams. Where did Daddy fish with a hook? Where did Daddy fish with a hook?
Who's Daddy?
I have no information as to Daddy. Mr. Levant? Mr. Adams?
In some sort of brook.
Yes, just the little fishes in the brook. Daddy caught them with a hook. Mother fried them in a pan. And baby ate them like a man. Not doing so badly on this one, Mr. Adams. Where?
Well, I know if it was hook, it wouldn't be river.
Now we'll see whether any of you gentlemen listen to the radio. Where did the three little fishes swim? Oh, Mr. Levant.
They swam all over the dam.
That's cute, Mr. Levant. That's right.
In the meadow?
That's 3 out of 4. But Mrs. Burns wants us to get all 4. Well, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to pay out $10, courtesy of Canada Dry, to Mrs. Burns, plus $5 for the use of the credit. Now, that was a very light and some may say even trivial question. We shall now have a very serious one from D. Gordon of this city. What recent news event does each of the following bring to mind? There are 4 of them. You must get 3 out of 4. If I say canned beef, what does that mean to you gentlemen? Canned beef, a recent news event dealing with canned beef. Mr. Walker.
The president's banning of the corned beef by the use of the Navy.
Yes, why was that done?
He said he could get it cheaper and it was better beef.
Yes, our own beef was cheaper and better, is that right?
No, the Argentine beef.
Oh, the Argentine beef.
Cheaper and better.
But the order was canceled, wasn't it?
Eventually, yes.
Who objected to it?
Everybody, especially
Both houses. Both houses did object to it.
Western ranchers, especially.
That's quite right. You read the papers, don't you, Mr. Walker?
Occasionally.
As well as edit them. Now, if I say 71.5 points, 71.5 points, what does that mean to you gentlemen? Mr. Adams.
Somebody won a track meet by that,
Yeah.
You're on the right track, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran.
Southern California.
Go ahead.
Tell
us the entire story.
IC4A championships with a new record point total. 71.5 points at Randall, at the Triborough Stadium, Randall's Island, on Saturday afternoon.
That sounds like the opening of a perfect news lead. Isn't that right, Mr. Walker? You got all the information in the first sentence.
One of the most beautiful things I ever heard.
It is nice, isn't it? All right. If I say orange and blue stamps, orange and blue stamps, what would that mean? A recent news event, Mr. Adams.
Stamps to commemorate the World's Fair.
That is a very baseball lovely stamp. And lyrical guess, Mr. Adams. It happens to be wrong.
Is that the Cooperstown baseball memorial?
Baseball stamp.
No, I may be wrong on this, but I think it's stamps issued by the United States government to be used by people on relief in connection with a plan to move surplus goods. Are you listening, Mr. Adams?
In Rochester.
All right. Where is that, Mr.
Rochester, Walker? New York, I believe.
Nowhere else so far?
Nowhere else yet.
I understand that for every dollar's worth of stamps purchased, they get 50 cents worth of blue stamps as a premium and must purchase food that they're trying to move. A little wrong on that, Mr. Adams. What gave you the idea that orange and blue stamps were connected with a fair? Or are you connected with a fair, Mr. Adams?
Because that's their colors.
It may be their color, but I don't think it was in the news recently. Mr. Walker, there's no question about our answer being correct, you'd say.
There's any question
at all. Very good.
We'll sue if
there is. I'm just bullying you, Mr. Walker, by the way. $7.5 million. $7.5 million.
It sounds like taxes again.
It does sound like taxes, Mr. Levant, but actually it has to do with what?
Taxes.
You still stick to taxes, Mr.
Levant. Taxes.
Sorry. It's a claim for back wages for 5,000 men, a claim made by the CIO through the National Labor Relations Board. Did you know that, Mr. Adams?
Yep.
Mr. Adams is kicking himself. I'm sorry I can't show you, ladies and gentlemen, how he does it. A nice trick. Against the Republic Steel Company. And the Republic Steel Company sued right back, I believe, for exactly the same amount, making what is known as a stalemate. We got about 2 7/8 out of 4, which is not quite enough for us. That's going to cost Canada Dry $10, plus $5 for the use of the question. That tremendous sum of money going out to Mr. Gordon of New York City. The next question from Harold L. Lewis of Elberon, New Jersey. Quote three American historical or patriotic songs or poems that deal with activity in the early hours of the morning, also known as wee hours of the morning. Oh, they all have their hands up. Mr. Levant.
Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning.
What historical event does that commemorate?
First, it was the first act curtain of our play. It's the first act finale of Alexander Ragtime Man. It was in the late Great War.
Well, that's your history. Yes, that's right. That's all right. I think I'd let that go. Sure. Perfectly
two plays
right,
in a war.
Mr. Kieran?
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light, yes. Francis Scott Key?
I'm glad you brought that up. That gives us two. Let's have one or two more. Did you think of another, Mr. Adams? Or were you thinking?
I thought of that one.
The Star Spangled Banner. There's still another.
By the dawn's early light.
You can go on with it, Mr. Levant. I know. It doesn't have to be a song. It may be a poem commemorating any event in our history. Mr. Levant again.
Well, I don't know the poem, but Paul Revere didn't ride very early in the afternoon.
No, very early in the morning. You're absolutely right, Mr. Levant.
The midnight ride of Paul Revere, but
sure,
it must have taken
and it lasted. It took him quite a while. He started at midnight, and he was going at 1 o'clock. He was galloping into Lexington.
Will you recite the poem? I don't know the poem.
What do you offer me, Mr. Levant? I'm open to any dishonest offer to recite that poem. Now, that gives us two standard ones, plus Mr. Levant's humorous suggestion, which I'd like to accept, being in a good-humored mood this evening. Let's see if we can't get another. Something connected with the Civil War. Does that help you, gentlemen? A poem connected with the Civil War? Mr. Kieran.
Sheridan's Ride.
That's perfectly right. Up from the south at break of day, bringing to Winchester fresh dismay and so forth. That's 3 out of 3. The next question comes from Mr. S. Brady of Portland, Oregon. Mr. Levant, I've often heard the phrase the music of the spheres. I don't know what kind of music that is, but you are asked by Mr. Brady to make a musical tour of the sky by playing music, either classical or popular, which would be appropriate to the sun, the moon, the stars, and the clouds in that order. Shall we start with the sun? And none of this sunny boy stuff, Mr. Levant. I can practically read your brain.
Not sunny boy?
No. Stymied him, by gosh.
Now
the real son.
I don't have to know the
lyrics. Do you mind naming it for my benefit?
It's
what is
a new sun in the sky from Bandwagon.
Sounds perfectly all right to me. How about the moon, Mr. Levant?
You mean no Moonlight Sonata like Sonny Boy? You don't want that.
No, you can have Moonlight Sonata.
No, I don't want the Moonlight
you
Sonata.
You don't like
you
it.
Can, Moon. Well, Blue Moon.
Oh, right. All right, you've got the sun and the moon under your belt, Mr. Levant. Let's have a few stars. Stars?
Stars?
Yeah, stars.
No evening star like Sonny Boy.
You're off classical music tonight, aren't you?
I've told every little star... Wait. I've told every little...
You can just play it if you wish. I wouldn't mind. That's swell. Very good. We've still got the clouds to go.
The clouds?
The clouds, yes. We've got to get this right. Otherwise, Mr. Brady gets Canada Dry's pennies from heaven.
The whole Valkyrie, the opera.
I beg pardon?
No, I won't do the Valkyrie.
Andy Wagner this evening, aren't you, Mr. Levant? I'm going to tell Wagner about it. That's good. Swell. Thanks very much. I have no doubt that Mr. Levant could go right on and give us something connected with each of the planets if I asked him, but I won't ask him. Mrs. C.G. Wheeler-Jones of Wallingford, Connecticut, propounds a question about famous ships. With what event is each of the following ships associated? You have to get 3 out of 4 on this. The first ship is the Oscar the Second. The Oscar the Second. Mr. Adams, I think he had his hand up first.
The Ford Peace Ship.
The Ford Peace Ship. What did it do?
It didn't do much, but it got a lot of people over to the other side to get the men out of the trenches by Christmas.
Yes, that was a very laudable ambition. The Oscar the Second, that's right. The Half Moon. The Half Moon. Mr. Keir.
Oh, you really don't ask that seriously.
All right. I don't know how to ask it humorously.
That's the boat that Henry Hudson rode in up our well-known river.
Yes. How did it happen then? Well, the river is, by a strange coincidence.
Yes.
Hudson River. That's right. The Half Moon. How about the George Washington? The George Washington.
Are you serious?
I'm serious about George Washington, too. I'm sorry. I didn't see hands on that. Mr. Adams.
That's the boat that President Wilson went to Europe on for the peace conference.
That's quite right. Brought him back, too. Brought him back. Always finish your story, Mr. Adams. He brought him back, too.
I didn't remember that.
The last is the Empress of Australia. The Empress of Australia, Mr. Walker?
I believe that's what the King and Queen of England came over on last week.
Yes, that's quite right. It's the first visit, isn't it, of a British monarch and his queen to...
Completely as far as I know, unless they've been smuggled over.
I doubt that very much.
Which I doubt, but...
I think it's very hard to smuggle kings and queens over these days. Well, let's see. Our experts have forced Canada Dry to pay out so far $20. And while the money's being counted out, we'll hear from Mr. Cross.
Last week on Information, Please, part of a scientific question referred to the discovery of charged water. Mr. Jaffe answered correctly that in 1760, Joseph Priestley developed a carbonated liquid that was enthusiastically accepted by the Royal Society and the College of Physicians. Naturally, many developments have occurred in 179 years. Probably the most outstanding is pinpoint carbonation, an exclusive Canada Dry process for making a club soda. A club soda that blends well with your favorite drink, makes it taste better, supplies extra life and sparkle, and what's more, retains that sparkle for 24 hours after the bottle has been opened. Today, there are many carbonated waters on the market, but none with the same popularity as sparkling Canada Dry water. So next time you order club soda, be sure to insist on Canada Dry. You'll also find it at leading clubs, restaurants, and hotels. In fact, wherever fine foods are served.
That's breaking the tape, Mr. Cross, at exactly 56 seconds. And now for the second half of our program, we'll start with a question from Mr. Harry Bowman of Salem, Ohio, who wants you to do a simple job of girl identification. All the girls involved in this question are named Alice. You have to identify the following Alices. Who is the Alice who went rowing with a mathematician? The Alice who went rowing with a mathematician. Mr. Kieran.
I think that was Alice who later went through the looking glass and into Wonderland.
Yes, it was a real Alice then,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, certainly. She died recently. That is, within the past year or two, didn't she, Frank?
Alice Hargraves.
Did she later become Alice Hargraves? Was her name originally Alice Liddell, Mr. Adams?
Yes.
All right. And and Lewis Carroll, of course, was the mathematician. Mr. Adams sometimes scares me when he has sense to what I say. Now, name an Alice who sings and swings. Who sings and swings. Mr. Levant.
Alice Faye. She sings more than she swings, though.
but she does swing on the screen and radio. That'd be another one. If you use the word, Mr. Levant.
Well, she doesn't sing or swing very well, but she's attempted at Alice Marble.
Alice Marble, yes. Tennis star and singer.
She swings a racket.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Mr. Adams,
mean racket.
You woke up beautifully on that one. Name an Alice who was not the author of her autobiography. This is a...
Say that again, please.
Yes, an Alice who was not the author of her autobiography. This is a difficult one. Mr. Walker.
Alice Adams.
Alice Adams? No, you're thinking of the novel by Booth Tarkington.
Yes, that's right.
I meant this quite literally.
And, sorry.
One who was not the author of her autobiography. Mr. LeMann.
I'm wrong. Is it Alice Longworth?
No.
Well, I said I was wrong before.
Yes, you covered yourself. Of course, you can't keep on covering yourself that way all evening, Mr. Levant. Well, the answer is that Gertrude Stein...
Alice Toklas.
Yes, Gertrude Stein, the well-known babbling brook of modern literature, wrote a book called The Autobiography of Alice B. Toklas. Miss Toklas is her secretary. That was just to confuse everybody, and she succeeded admirably. That was the Alice who was not the author of her own autobiography. If that isn't clear, just send in letters, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be glad to answer them. An Alice who cried when you smiled at her. Who would that be? An Alice who cried when you smiled at her, Mr. Adams.
Sweet Alice. Ben Bolt.
Yes. Don't be sparing.
She
Let's
wept
have a little
with
more.
Delight when you gave her a smile.
Yeah.
And trembled with fear at your frown.
Very good. That's right. They're swell on Alice's. Now, Mr. Milton J. Aborn of New Haven, Connecticut, has concocted the following. By the way, have you ever been waked up out of a sound sleep by a singing telegram? You know, they now sing telegrams over the wire.
You mean happy birthday?
That's it, Mr. Levant. A telegraph operator called up and delivered the following singing telegram to a man. I'm going to have the pianist play the telegram rather than sing it, because I know this pianist. And I'm going to ask you to identify the words of the telegram. This is not so easy. All right, shoot. That's the beginning of the telegram. We're going to run it all through, Mr. Levant. Pretty witty so far, isn't it, that telegram? Hope you're all still listening. That's Mr. Levant trying out his front teeth. That's the end of the telegram. Now, you gentlemen can get together on this. Mr. Levant, how does it start?
Starts by Alice B. Toklas, but it's small fry.
Small fry. That's the salutation.
John,
now, how does it go on? Now, Mr. Kieran, did you get the second part of the telegram?
Yeah, let's give it again.
Get out of town. That's the beginning of the message. I don't think we ought to ask the pianist to play very much more. We ought to remember it. Mr. Levant.
The third is in the still of the night.
That's right. Small fry, get out of town in the still of the night. And what's the fourth part of the message?
When that midnight is your turn in Alabama.
That's right, Mr. Levant. Now, all we have to do is get the ending, Mr. Kieran.
The signature?
Yes, the signature.
Harrigan,
yes. That's the singing telegram. How do they charge for those telegrams, Mr. Levant?
Like
by the note.
By the note, do they, really?
There's no song called Collect, is there?
Don't know of any. You gentlemen think that was easy? Seems to me it was very, very difficult. The next question from Charles Emmel of Brooklyn, New York, has to do with fathers-in-law and sons-in-law. Name a father-in-law and a son-in-law, both of whom are or were famous in the following fields. The first field is the field of music. Mr. Levant.
Liszt and Wagner.
Liszt and Wagner, yes. Which was the father-in-law and which was the son-in-law?
Liszt was the father-in-law and Wagner was the son-in-law. He had a lot of son-in-laws, though.
Which one?
Well, Liszt? First it was von Bülow. No, Liszt, yes. And then Wagner married Cosima Wagner.
Right. Now, the second field would be the field of physical science. A famous father-in-law and son-in-law in the field of physical science.
Sounds like the Huxley family.
Huxley.
No, it isn't. I'm awfully sorry. They were father and son, Mr. Adams and Mr. Levant.
And grandson, too.
Yes, father, son, and grandson. That's quite right. The son, as a matter of fact, was not a scientist, but was a literary man. And the grandson, Julian Huxley, is a scientist. But the answer is what?
Wait.
Sorry, gentlemen. Did you have it, Mr. Levant?
You give me another 10 minutes.
Awfully sorry. We have to get 3 out of 4 on this, and the answer is Pierre Curie, one of the discoverers of radium, and Frédéric Joliot, who is his son-in-law and who married one of his daughters, as son-in-laws so often do. That's how you can tell. That's one wrong. Now, a father-in-law and a son-in-law in the field of American politics. In the field of American politics. Think hard.
Sounds like my family.
Mr. Kieran?
Well, Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, and Nicholas Longworth.
That's quite right, yes. President Theodore Roosevelt and the Speaker Nicholas Longworth. You have another one, Mr. Levant?
No, I'm angry. I should have known that.
You think you should have? It's not your field. Your field is music.
Well, that's nobody's field.
Politics?
That particular.
Free field. All right.
That's
and how
all
about
right.
Baseball,
Longworth was
then?
A violinist.
He was, yeah.
Have you gentlemen stopped talking to each other? How about baseball? A father-in-law and son-in-law in the field of baseball. All right, Mr. Levant, you're very eager on this.
I don't know how legitimate Joe Cronin and Clark Griffith. I think she's an adopted daughter.
That's right.
But we'll let it go.
For a son-in-law.
Joe Cronin and Clark Griffith.
Oh, Clark Griffith, the president of the Washington team,
Mr.
and Joe Cronin.
I don't think Mr. Kieran will let that go,
will you? Well, I'll let it go, yes.
All right, Mr. Kieran, let it go. It's probably all right. That's pretty well on that, relatively speaking. The next one from Samuel Sokol of 80 Center Street of this city is a question involving your knowledge of the law. The law. You remember the law, Mr. Adams?
The law,
oh, like yesterday.
Explain the following legal terms which are in common use, or so Mr. Sokol says. Eminent domain. I've seen that again and again. Mr. Kieran.
That's the right of the government or the king or the ruling party to take over private property and give what they please for it.
Yes, it's called a due compensation, I believe.
At times.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right.
It's a euphemism.
The next is ex post facto. What does ex post facto mean? Mr. Walker?
I'll have to illustrate that. You pass a law now which punishes you for something that you did yesterday or last week, or which takes care of some situation that happened then. And the idea is you can't do that. You can't pass a law.
It isn't allowable under our Constitution, is it?
No.
Very good, Mr. Walker. Thanks. Now, what does fee simple mean? Fee simple. Mr. Walker again.
It's when you're paid for something completely and simply. You own it outright.
Well, I think it has a very specific application.
It's an old English phrase, but I don't remember the...
It means absolute ownership, particularly of real estate, I believe. Is that right, Mr. Kieran?
Yes.
I don't know why I asked Mr. Kieran.
It goes back to English common law. They sell on what they call freehold over there, which is different from fee simple. Freehold has an indefinite tenure with regard to a lease, but you do not actually own it outright in fee simple.
Fascinating, Mr. Kieran. Fascinating. Fascinating. You have me absolutely spellbound. How do you know these things, Mr. Kieran?
I read the English advertisements.
Finds time to do everything. I don't suppose I can catch any of you gentlemen on habeas corpus. Habeas corpus? Mr. Kieran.
Well, that's the right to sue out a writ of habeas corpus so that no man can be held in captivity or jail without due reason being shown for having him in there.
You may have the body.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams has just given the body to Mr. Kieran. Mr. Kieran's taken it away with him, and we now have a new legal light in the Honorable John Kieran. I'd like to see one of those wigs they wear over in England sometime, Mr. Kieran.
I need one.
Yes, I know. I was just going to suggest it. The next question from Elizabeth C. Thomas of East Hampton, New York. Oh, gee, Mr. Kieran, it's about birds. Not a woodpecker in it, however. What well-known utterance is attributed to each of the following birds? A raven. The raven, Mr. Levant.
Nevermore.
Nevermore. From what poem, Mr. Levant?
The Raven by Edgar Allan.
Very good. A parrot. A parrot. Mr. Kieran?
Pieces of Eight from Treasure Island by R.L. Stevenson.
Yes. A sparrow. Mr. Adams.
A remark attributed to a sparrow?
Yes.
Aye.
That's right. That's right. How does he go on after that? He did have something else to say.
With my hooked and ladder. My bow and arrow.
Ah, you're just fooling me, Mr. Adams. I can tell. I said the sparrow with my bow and arrow, yes. An owl. Mr. Adams.
To whit to who?
In what poem? Of course, they do.
Shakespeare.
They do say that. To whit to who? Shakespeare?
Yes, sir.
A merry
yes,
note while Greasy
while
Joan...
While Greasy Joan
doth keel the pot.
Aren't we good? That's right. Yes, or Oh, Beautiful Pussy, Oh, Pussy, My Love from The Owl and the Pussycat. Either one of those. Now, how about a Dickey Bird? A Dickey Bird.
He's on the Yankees.
Mr. Adams.
Titwillow.
Yes, go ahead. Give us a little more. Be generous, Mr. Adams. How does the Dickey Bird go on after saying Titwillow? Mr. Kieran. Mr. Kieran.
Titwillow.
That's perfectly right. Mr. Kieran, what species does a Dicky bird belong to? I've always wanted to know what a Dicky bird was.
The Dicky bird belongs to the same family as the green-crested cowbird that lays its eggs in the milk pails.
That makes everything perfectly clear. Thank you very much, Mr. Kieran. Information, please, never fails. And so, alas and alack, Canada Dry's losses have been $20. Now Mr. Cross wants a word with you, and I'll announce next week's lineup thereafter.
These are days when frequently we feel the need of a nice, cold, refreshing drink. When you do, you'll find there isn't a better refresher than Pale Dry Ginger Ale. Now, it was Canada Dry that first popularized Pale Dry Ginger Ale, with the result that today more people all over the world enjoy Canada Dry than any other ginger ale. The reason is largely its sparkle and distinctive flavor, for Canada Dry is made under an exclusive process of extraction that seals in all the natural aroma, goodness, and delicate bouquet of the choicest Jamaica ginger. Yes, ginger ale is a refreshing drink. Canada Dry is known as the champagne of ginger ales. And remember, if you are not one of the thousands who have received the Information Please game, here's all you have to do to get your copy. Mail the labels from two large bottles of any of Canada Dry's many beverages. Just enough of the labels to identify them. Include 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling, and your own name and address. Mail as soon as you can the two pieces of labels and 10 cents to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. Or if you live in Canada, the address is Canada Dry, Toronto.
Thanks, Mr. Cross, and Canada Dry thanks you, Mr. Walker, for coming down and helping out our terrifying trio this evening. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be on deck again, and our guests will be the noted music critic and composer, Mr. Deems Taylor, and the conductor of the New York Sun's humorous column, The Sundial, H.I. Phillips. Mr. Adams, you don't mind having a competitor down next week, do you? To all you listeners, we say, just send your questions along. We want them. If you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question, and another $10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win $15 in all. Send your letters with questions to Information Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.